Welcome, everyone. This is our second module four call. Delighted to see you all here. And this is going to be quite an interactive session. We're going to go through one of the coaching tools together because I think it's super helpful to see how this works. I'm going to support you to do this for yourself and talk about some top tips for how you can use this with your clients as well. So I'm hoping by the end of our session, you'll have a really good sense of both what we're doing and why, as we're uncovering some of these protective beliefs that really are linked back to the root causes of self-doubt. So that's what we're up for today. I hope that sounds good to you. Couple of just like admin-y points. If you haven't already, can I be your stationery dealer and encourage you to have some sort of journal where you're reflecting on your experience of this program and what that's bringing up for you. Any kind of reflective practice that you use as a practitioner is going to be so helpful, even if you're not really a journaler. But the idea of exploring your own world and how this work may or may not be changing things for you is going to be super helpful on a practical level. When you come to certify, you're going to have a record of your learning, which is going to make that so much easier. But also, I think if you are starting to reflect on your own experience, you're going to start noticing themes and patterns, particularly around where you might be getting entangled with clients, what just feels a little sticky for you. But also you're going to start seeing, oh, I'm really owning this. Like, this process I'm feeling really, really good about, really confident with. So it's going to help you to sort of dip into your experience of this process. What you'll notice is at the end of each of the module pages, there is a number of reflections that Scott wrote, actually, really helpfully, to just deepen your learning, give you a sort of 20-minute, half an hour maybe at the end of each module, where you're just reflecting on has this been like for me? How is my relationship with self-doubt changing personally? What's it like working with clients using these tools and approaches and concepts? What feels unclear or uncomfortable? It's a great source of what to bring to a study group. What breakthroughs, revelations, just damn good sessions are you having with clients that you want to record for yourself? It's also going to be super helpful if you ever decide to work with a supervisor, because you're going to have this record of what's going on for you right at your fingertips. So if you need an excuse — I don't need any excuse to buy a new journal, but if you need one, then this take this as one. Yeah, Kathy, I'm with you. I'm like, I want to reach out and show you my new green leather one. Yeah, or pleather, I think it is. It'll be vegan. I would have thought of that. Anywho, so yeah, that's just a note on reflective practice, if that feels good to you. Okay, so let's return to module four. What we're doing here in this module is exploring the root causes of our clients' self-doubt. And the reason we're doing that is because it helps our clients to understand and make sense of their own experience. Right, so I'm just going to share my screen. So we talked about this last week, about when we can help our clients to understand why their self-doubt is showing up in the context that it is, it helps them to understand more about why that alarm's going off, why something feels risky to them. That may actually defy logic. They may, on an intellectual level, say, well, of course I know I can do this. It's just that there's something in me that's saying it's either not safe, or maybe I'm not capable, or there is a risk here, right? And so we're helping our clients to understand, why is it that that alarm, that self-doubt alarm, has been activated? It's going to say to them in many different ways, don't do this, you might hurt yourself. And what we're trying to understand is, why is that there? Because what you'll find, and you may already be cognizant of this, is that self-doubt isn't a sort of single tone note, right? Some things we may find quite easy to do. There doesn't seem to be any risk involved. There are objectively courageous, brave things, and we can do them without really thinking too much about it. And other things in our lives seem like sticking points, places where we're just unable to move things forward. And we may have some insight around why that's happening, but to be able to really understand that and make sense of it is where the change of where we change why that alarm is going off and how we can interrupt it in really healthy ways. Yeah. So we talked last week around, you know, what kind of happens. You know, we have past memories, past experiences. We have a sense of, you know, do we belong in this room? That psychological safety of, you know, is it safe for us to be our full selves? And the current context of the client, you know, are they hydrated and well slept, you know, well rested? All of these things are potentially going to set off that alarm or contribute to it. And it's that meaning making, that what we make that experience mean, that over time will lead to the development of some sort of protective belief, right? Oh, I don't finish things. I'm a procrastinator. Not good with conflict. We just say these very, what we call quite thin stories about who we are and what we're capable of. And we'll say them very matter-of-factly, right? You may do this yourself about some aspects of who you know yourself to be. And it's like, I'm just reporting a fact, and this is the news, right? It's not a debate show. It's the news, right? Here's what happens. And that's because we reinforce that protective belief through our meaning making. So this works kind of both ways. One of the phrases that I use that can sometimes be a little bit of a head spinner to get hold of, but our brains are always seeing what they believe rather than believing what they see, right? So our brains will, our thinking minds are looking for evidence to support what we already believe, not, oh, here's brand new evidence about something that's completely different that changes us. It's why I think it's really, really hard to unlearn who you know yourself to be if you get caught up in some kind of conspiracy theory or a cult, right? We can't come at that with logic. That's not how we help people to unhook themselves from that kind of context, right? We actually have to go through a process of unlearning those beliefs. Right. So we're doing something kind of similar here in helping our clients kind of unhook from that self-doubt cult that they have created for themselves, a conspiracy theory, if you like, about who they are and what they're capable of. So I just want to just pause there for a second and just check in that everyone's kind of feeling okay around what we're doing here and why. And if anyone wants to share anything, please feel free. All feels clear, everybody? Yeah. So, okay, let's dive into to protective beliefs. And I just want to share a couple of things that I think is helpful to notice and to sort of reinforce. And this information is obviously in the workbook, but I just want to draw this out for people. So protective beliefs will be related to past experiences and how we've responded, but specifically how we've responded to keep ourselves safe. That might be childhood experiences, but it could be teenage. It could be, you know, in the office last week. It's not about, you know, early developmental stuff necessarily. It's just something has happened in the past that has led us to respond in a certain way, led us to create some meaning. And that experience has created some sensitivity to a particular risk. Right? It would have felt either hurtful, traumatic, difficult, uncomfortable, something on that spectrum. And that has led to us going, oh, this does not feel good. I'm going to respond differently. I'm going to do something different. And that means that our sensitivity to those risks is a sort of low-level hum, right? It's not usually in our, you know, consciousness, in our daily consciousness. It lives in what we call implicit memory, which is the subconscious or automatic memory. I think this is where we, and I know we all agree the body does keep the score, but but the research says that actually our body does not remember a damn thing, right? Our brains remember a thing. Our memories live in our consciousness, which is located somewhere in our beings. But it's not like our body is keeping the score. It's just using that memory as a way to remind us ourselves that something is risky. Yeah. So those, particularly when it comes to protective beliefs, right, the things that we need to keep ourselves safe from, they're going to be linked to those experiences of risk, be it discomfort, hurt, trauma, whatever has happened that has kind of left a mark, we will want to protect ourselves from those things reoccurring. I want you to notice the language here, right? We're talking about protective beliefs, not limiting beliefs, because there isn't like some part of us that wants us to be limited, small, shrink to fit. It's trying to protect us, right? So to me, it's important to recognize that this isn't about limiting you in any way, because that would suggest that there is a part of you that wants to kind of poop on your dreams. Right. And I just have not found that to be the case. But there is this part that wants to protect us from being hurt. Our beliefs can also be inherited from someone close to the client, someone close to us, that can usually be a parent or an influential other person. Right. You may have grown up, if you think about the sort of credo that you're family of origin lived by, right? And the example I always give is I was raised by working class parents. I'm the granddaughter of two coal miners, and so my whole family was basically anyone who wasn't working class was probably fiddling the system and was a bit evil, right? So I've inherited this quite crunchy relationship with things like success and wealth. And I also grew up in New Zealand where, you know, we have this known cultural narrative of what we call tall poppy syndrome, which you may be aware of, where, you know, if anyone sticks their head too far above the surface, you're asking to be lopped off, basically, right? So it's like, oh, I recognize those beliefs. And it's like, I then have to use a bit of discernment sometimes, like, you know, am I getting too big for my boots, or am I just saying something that matters to me? Where does that sense of fear come from? So notice, like, the beliefs that we inherit can feel as real to us as the ones that we cultivate ourselves. And all of our protective beliefs are looked after by the protector, by that metaphoric name that we give self-doubt. No? Vicky, were you waving at me? No? Okay. And the last point I just want to make is notice globalizing language that clients will use to name their protective beliefs. So again, it becomes this very kind of thin story. I don't finish things, right? And our clients will reveal that to us in quite matter of fact, often throwaway lines. And it's like, oh, that never works for me. Everybody else has got their shit together. I'm the only one who, right? So just notice that extreme language of no one, everyone, never, always, everybody, that kind of wording is usually a clue that there may be a protective belief at work. And it's a great prompt to say, you know, what does that actually look like and feel like to you? Let's talk about it. Angela, I'm being quite broad when I talk about inherited beliefs. It's basically what we've learned from our family of origin, right? So epigenetics, I'm kind of on the fence about epigenetics. I mean, I think absolutely we inherit our the kind of experience of our, particularly our immediate family, if it's our parents and grandparents. But there's very little evidence to show that we actually adopt the same response to any kind of traumatic experience that someone else has had. There are things like vicarious trauma, and there are things like we learn how to behave depending on the rules of our family. So I'm a little bit on the fence. I think it's a fascinating area around genetic DNA as a source of trauma for us to experience. If you talk to anyone who's into past lives, you know, there is a kind of, there are other theories around where we get our beliefs from. So I just want to share what I know to be true, and you take this and weave it into your own understanding. Yeah. When I say inherited beliefs, I'm talking about what we and what our parents teach us is true about the world and who we need to be to cope, manage, succeed in that world. Yeah. I hope that's clear. Hope that's helpful. Okay, cool. So the aim of uncovering protective beliefs for the client, for ourselves, is to understand, like, why is self-doubt holding us back? I want to lead you through the uncovering protective beliefs process. We're going to do this together as a group and kind of share as we go. And the reason we're doing this together is because you're going to see right from the start that this isn't actually about knowing what to do, right? Because usually we know what we need to do. It's about understanding why we're not doing what we know we need to do. It can be incredibly helpful for our clients to see this laid out in a way that's super supportive of why they're responding in the way they are. There's often a lot of judgment and shame tied up in the way we sort of manage our self-doubt or feel like we're not managing it. So I wanted us to spend some time going through this together. We did this in the morning class, and it was super fun. We had a really, really cool experience of it. And a few what Oprah would call aha moments, if you're familiar with that term, which was kind of fun. It was kind of fun. It was like, oh my goodness, now things are starting to make sense. And that's always a really super fun experience. So whether you have an aha moment or whether this is just reassuring you that you have some choices in your responses to maybe quite old protective beliefs, I think this is a really useful exercise to go through. It's also helpful because, again, you start to talk about this this work from your own experience of it rather than as a kind of theoretical exercise. So I think that can be super helpful. Okay, so I'll just share the template with you so you know which one it is. So this is uncovering protective beliefs. It looks like this. It's four columns. So there's four kind of questioning processes that we go through. And the idea here is to find out why self-doubt is holding you back, right? So I want you to start by coming up with what we've got here is the big goal, my big goal. Think of this as a general overarching desired endpoint, if you like. Something that you don't have in your life right now that you would like either to start doing or have more of. Something that you don't have in your life right now that you want to start having or have more of. The reason to clarify that is because you're going to find that your clients have a varied relationship with goals. Some are going to be super motivated by having a goal, and they may actually be quite identified with goals, in which case they may be quite perfectionist potentially around their relationship with goals. And maybe if they don't achieve a goal, that can represent something that's quite difficult for them. So what we don't want to do is add to that, right? We want to stay in our healthy selves, be lovingly detached to our clients' goals. At the other end of the spectrum, you're going to have clients who use goals as a tool to beat themselves up with, right? I don't finish things. I'm not good. I'm a procrastinator. And so you can open this up with a quite generalized statement, right? Tell me about something that you want to be doing that you're not doing right now. Tell me about a place in your life where self-doubt is holding you back. Right? What is it that you want that you don't have? Okay. So I'd love you to just record something for yourself, and we're going to use the session to explore that. So choose something that is helpful for you. It could be something personal, and it could be something to do with your practice. It's totally up to you. It could be something that you've talked about here before, and you may have a story about, well, God, I've already mentioned that, and I still haven't sorted it, so no one's going to want to hear about that. No, it's great. Bring it along. So everyone got something that's just a general direction of travel here, right? Don't make it too specific, because when you start getting into SMART goals, that's when your brain starts losing the will to live, yeah? Okay, so this first column, I just want you to name some actions you could take that would contribute to you achieving that goal. Right, what could you be doing that you're not currently doing that would help you achieve that goal? Right, I want to get better at a few things. What would those things be? So you just want to list maybe 3 to 6 things. What actions could you take that you're not currently doing that would help you to make progress towards this goal? Everyone got a few things that they could be doing. Yeah. Did anyone find this particularly difficult? Or did you all kind of know things you could be doing? Yeah. Notice that, right? Our clients are super smart. They kind of know what to do. They know the next step. They know the things that would really help, right? So a lot of goal-focused type approaches is all about the things that we already know, because that's nice and safe often, right? There's no controversy there. But we go beyond Captain Obvious coaching, right? So you've got now a goal, an aim, something you want to be doing more of, and you've got a list of some things that you could be doing that would help contribute towards that goal. So in the second column, we want to list down what you're doing instead of those things that you're not doing. And I want you to think specifically, and the 6 P's can help you here, right? Be specific. So if you're a procrastinator, if you're procrastinating instead of doing those things, if you kind of know that about yourself, what do you actually do when you're procrastinating? Do you tinker around your website rather than writing your sales page, for example? No one's ever done that before. Or if you get into those passive behaviors, is it, for me, it's keeping up with the Kardashians and a bag of Doritos, right? Like, kind of out yourself to yourself, right? How are you doing? What are you doing instead, and how are you doing that? How would we know that you were doing that? Couple of things to notice here. We want to talk about actions, not feelings. All right, so something that you can observe yourself doing. And that's going to be really helpful when you start to interrupt this pattern. And the second thing is, do notice how it feels though to out yourself. There may be some shame, low grade shame, maybe higher. There may be some embarrassment or a feeling like, oh, this is really off brand for me. I'm a coach and I shouldn't be doing this kind of thing. That can come up. Just notice that, because that's what our clients will often experience as well. Where it's like, oh, it's kind of embarrassing to say that I do this. So just list a couple of things that you're doing instead. How do you avoid those actions that you want to start doing? Does anyone want to share what they're doing instead? Either in the chat or just offer it up. Can be incredibly cathartic to say it out loud. What do you notice yourself doing? Yeah, Cassie.
I would always would have said I was procrastinating, but because you said be specific about what you're actually doing, I realized I'm actually doing passive behaviors.
Yeah.
Because I'm not actually being productive doing something else. I'm pottering around. It's taking me far too long, like taking me 2 hours to get to my desk rather than an hour. But I couldn't actually tell you what I was doing, or I'm on my phone, or I'm just, whereas I think in the past I would have gone, oh, I'm such a procrastinator. But I think I've shifted more into like passive behaviors.
Yeah, great thing to recognize. Cool. Yes, Al.
No, I noticed Angela's comment about reading books. I have replaced a sort of Netflix, Hulu, British police drama habit that was very satisfying, but not very helpful in doing the things I want to get better at. But I thought I was doing a good thing, because I've read like 4 or 5 books in the last week and a bit, but I've realized as I'm looking at this, thinking that same amount of time would have taken care of pretty much everything on the list.
Yeah. Notice how the actions we take, the protective actions, protective behaviors we engage in, actually feel really good. They're kind of comforting, right? It's like, oh, great, good to know. Good to know. And we'll talk more about why we're doing those things, but just great to just name it for yourself. Yeah, reading is amazing, right?
And it's an improvement on Netflix, personally. It's a sort of, it definitely feels, but it's still taking time that could be used on.
Yeah. I found that as well in working with new coaches, like I'm reading so many books, right? I've got the self-help library to die for, and I'm reading so many books, and it's like, great, I bet that's super helpful. And how many clients have you been working with? Right? So it's like, so are you coaching or are you reading? Right? And it's like, there's nothing wrong with that. But what we want to do is out ourselves to ourselves, right? We want to shine a bit of a light on what's going on. Yeah. And this will become clear as we look at why we're doing it. But yeah.
I was just going to jump in too on that piece about self-justification.
Yeah.
It's so tricky, right? Because sometimes you're just reading, like that's the thing that you want to do. And sometimes you're reading as a way to protect from self-doubt and getting really crystal clear about that. So that I feel like sometimes I can get into that place of maybe like pathologizing whatever the behavior is that I'm doing to avoid the risk. And I appreciate sort of the neutrality of it all in this conversation, that it's like, okay, we can just notice reading doesn't have to be universally problematic, but if I'm doing it because there's something crunchy that I'm trying to get away from, that's a good distinction to notice.
It's a great thing to raise as well, because our clients will often want to justify what they're doing, right? Because they don't want us to judge them. Of course they don't, right? So they want to give us an explanation, right? Here's what I'm doing, but actually, you know, if we dig a little deeper, right? And the thing is that whatever we're doing, if we're overworking, or we're feeling super driven and in flow, right? If we're reading for self-care or reading for avoiding, it's going to look the same, right? It's going to look the same to the outside world, but it will feel different to you. And so it's one of the things to notice is, where might you be sharing, right, those protective behaviors? Where might you share those with your client and not want to out yourself, right, to because you're seeing for them actually this is a protective behavior, and maybe you share that, right? So there could be a sort of little awkwardness around addressing it, right? It's one of the reasons why we do this. Yeah Angela, love to hear what you want to share.
Yeah, so what I'm getting really curious about is right along the lines of what you were just sharing, you know, being an ADHD person, really struggling with falling through on things or finishing things, or the pattern of taking on so many things because I'm in a hyper-focus mode and then the energy just totally peters out. And so what I'm curious about is the willingness to explore what beliefs may be underneath that, not to invalidate the way my brain works, or on a bad mental health week, not to invalidate that experience. Or, you know, like there are legitimate things that come up in people's lives, but I'm just wondering about the willingness to explore the self-doubt belief could start kind of like unraveling. I don't know the right language, but I don't know if I'm making sense or not. So I'm just wondering if you have any questions when there are things like chronic illness, yeah, and neurodivergence, mental health challenges, you know, how do all those things come together to help someone identify their self-doubt beliefs or protective beliefs?
I love this question so much. And I think it is key to this, right? Is that one of the things that we're doing here is highlighting something that a client is going to be feeling some kind of discomfort, crunchiness, maybe shame around, right? If that's clean, right? If that is from a clean place where I'm like, I'm totally conscious that I'm doing this, and I'm doing this because my energy is flatlined for whatever reason, then it's unlikely to come up in this kind of context, right? In this kind of context, we're talking about where we're protecting ourselves, right? So we'll only know that the client is protecting themselves if we start to see what's in the other box, basically, what's in the second half of the process. When it comes to any kind of neurodivergence, it's important to get to know your client and their way of coping, right? Their way of managing. So I want to keep all of what we're doing very neutral, right? Like reading, fantastic, right? Taking on too many things is a way to sometimes keep active because you're wanting to quite consciously compartmentalize an aspect of your life. But it can also be because we're wanting to keep proving ourselves, right? So all of the protective behaviors that people are engaging in, we're kind of neutral about, right? We're very much like, this is going to make sense. Right, it's going to make sense why you're doing this. And all I would say is that these are the ways you've found to keep yourself safe. Right? All of these protective behaviors are ways that you're keeping yourself safe, and safety can mean taking care of yourself in different ways. I don't know if that helps you, Angela. It may become clear as we move through this a little further.
Can I paraphrase in just one sentence something I just wrote down that I'm wondering if this can help? So what I'm hearing is approach it with neutrality, not with the mindset of pathologizing any behavior. And also this kind of exploration requires self-honesty.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if like those things are present, then we can hold space for the very legitimate, real things that are happening with, you know, within a person's life. And also this willingness to go, I wonder if there is something here that could even be contributing, you know, to making these things even worse, that we'll at least explore it. Is that kind of a way to approach it?
There's just no, I think, pathologizing or putting any kind of value judgment on the way someone keeps themselves safe serves no one. Right. So
thank you.
And so staying in that place of what I call loving detachment. It's like, I am super rooting for you, my darling client, right? And I'm super detached from how you take care of yourself. You know, it's like if someone is in that place of and I think, Adrian, you're talking about this around seeing something through, right? Sometimes I just want to pick up on that, and it may be out of context from what you've meant because I haven't read your whole comment. But clients that are super driven and will see things through, actually having some passive behaviors for 5 minutes may actually be of service to them, right? So I think part of this is about just being mindful of the wider system that the client is operating in, what makes up their world, their reality. And any aspect of neurodivergence or a history of trauma or, you know, just current stresses is going to contribute to that place that they're in right now. So it's unhelpful for us to put any judgment on what they're doing, but what we want them to do is notice it. Right, because we want to put them in a place of choice, right? I want to come back to this, Angela, because I think I'm interested to know what comes up for you as we move through to the end, and Adrian as well. So what I'm hoping is that you now have a list of the things that you want to do, actions you could take that would contribute towards your goal. And some ideas of, you know, the specific things that you do to avoid those actions, what you do instead. Okay. Your worry box, this is kind of the most important aspect of this process. If you couldn't do these avoidant protective behaviors, what do you worry would happen? Right? So if you stopped all the ways you're protecting yourself, what comes up for you? What worries, doubts, fears come up for you? and you'll start to uncover like what's competing with your goal. Yeah, so just list a few worries for you. Key thing to note here, they don't have to make sense logically, right? They could say something like, I'll be voted off the island and no one will love me and I'll end up living under a bridge, right? You can go to the worst case scenario. That it's like permission to worry a lot, right? But open it up for yourself. Anyone want to share what they're worried about? I promise you it can be cathartic. Yeah, Jane.
Okay, I'm going to share, but I think it will help answer kind of what Angela was asking. And I was wondering too about like what I'm doing instead versus like what's in the worry box and if that's actually a problem or if I'm just making it a problem. So like the what I'm doing instead is like focusing on my family, volunteer work, starting new creative projects, looking for paying jobs, researching, taking more classes. But so the part where I'm like, but is that a problem? In the class I watched before, you had mentioned somebody had used a metaphor of feeling like they had a foot on the gas and a foot on the brake. And when I thought of that metaphor, I was like, I feel like I've stepped out of the car and I'm on a four-way gravel road trying to choose a path with like the map on the hood and just not knowing where I want to go. and then deciding, no, I'm just going to camp here and look at the stars. And that actually feels better. So that's the part where I'm like, but that actually feels good right now. And I gave myself permission for that, but I also still have all of these goals and recognizing like the self-protective things that are going on with that and knowing like, are we just unshaming it? Are we giving it space? That I still have questions about, but, I can share what's in the worry box too.
Yeah, I would love to hear that. It's such a lovely thing to see both. Yeah.
So in the worry box is I'd be a bad mother or selfish. Mm-hmm. I'd be beating a dead horse or oblivious to the reality of a failed idea. Mm-hmm. I'd be found out as dumb or wrong. And I'd not be of value.
Wow. Yeah. They're big worries, right? No wonder you got out of the car. Yeah. Yeah. Just really want to like affirm you sharing that with us, Jane. It's like moving to hear you say that. Yeah. Just notice if you need to kind of have a breath, you know?
Yeah, I'm doing this.
Yeah. And I just want to bring this back to the group. Like, just notice if you have that, your version of that. if your worries actually feel quite sort of difficult to sit with. And what you said, Jane, I just want a final point before letting you go, is what you shared is exactly what happens. All things can be true, right? It's why we don't want to judge those behaviors, because at the moment, that's what is keeping the client feeling okay. Yeah, it comforted in some way from these quite painful worries. What if I'm found out? What if all these things I worry about turn out to be true? No wonder it feels way better to be engaging in those protective behaviors. Like, how smart of you, how sophisticated is your self-doubt to divert you into all of these behaviors so you don't have to face all of that? Yeah. Yeah. Vicky, I'm seeing your hand up. I wonder if you want to share as well. Yeah.
Yeah, I tried this a little bit with a client earlier today, and it's really linked back doing the exercise for myself here. So we were going through, she's a hairdresser, but she's now added nutrition and lifestyle coaching into her practice. And she emails her clients about when her next hairdressing appointments are. And I said, well, you know, why don't you pop a sentence on there saying a little bit about, you know, sharing your latest testimonial on what you're doing with that. And she, you know, that feels a bit strange. And it was, okay, well, what's the fear there? What's the worry there? And she said, the worry is that they'll not like me, and they'll stop wanting to even book their hairdressing appointments with me, and that I'll make, which effectively is like, I'll make less money, you know, I'll lose them even as hairdressing clients, let alone, you know, getting them as nutrition and lifestyle coaching and clients. And it was kind of similar, like I'd said, what am I doing instead? I'm busying myself, seeing clients, taking ages to write, you know, client notes, just ignoring, you know, all the other things that I want to be doing, and looking at those fears, I'd be making less money, that my brain is saying, well, if I divert my attention there, I'll lose money, I'll make less money. And then, like, one layer down from Jane's share and everything is that I'm going to be disappointing people if I do that. You know, I've got a community of people looking up to me and watching me. I say it more frequently and openly to my husband, like, I'm letting you down, if that's what's happening. And that sense of disappointment absolutely comes back to, you know, childhood things and what I was told and made to feel. So yeah, it was really interesting to see how that mimicked that conversation with the client. It was really helpful for her to see that as a fear, and like, oh, okay, that's where that's coming from, and actually how it's reflected in my own fear box and worry box as well.
And isn't it interesting? I think you give such a great example here of, oh, just adding a note to the end of an email seems like such a simple thing, right? And yet it's not, because of how our protector will make that into a three-ring circus, right? It will say, whoa, hang on a freaking minute, hold yourself back. And in order sometimes, I think, to kind of make it make sense, we go off into this land of the worst case scenario, right? And it's good to notice that, right? Your clients just get offering you a news report. Well, if I do this, here's what's going to happen, to something that they have not done yet and has not happened yet, right? And so it's like, if we can hold ourselves with, you know, a little gentleness and compassion and some humor around that, like, wow, I'm making this mean a whole lot of stuff, yeah? The important thing to notice is that the reasons for those worries are very, very valid and worthy of our attention, because they are going to be connected to those past experiences where something like that has happened before, right? There is a reason why this particular action, these particular actions, this goal has us feeling antsy, has us responding in this way.
Yeah, and I kind of mentioned, I said, oh, maybe that's triggering, so maybe that's bringing something up from the past moment. And she didn't really want to go there, and I didn't push it, but I just sort of said, you know, just have a think, just notice it and see, yeah, what's getting in the way of adding that one sentence to an email.
Yeah. 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 So, So great, Vicky. Thank you. Anyone else want to share their what's in their worry box? Just to maybe get it into the world and have a little poke around in it. Yeah, Colette.
Hi.
Hi.
I just kept it quite simple. So mine was around writing a program that I can kind of put out to parents. So yes, that's my next thing. But
I'm so excited to see that come to life.
Yeah, I've been thinking about it for a long time, and but there's something that stops me from even starting. I've got all these ideas up here, but there's something that stops me from even starting. So I was like, okay, what's that about? So firstly, it's like, there's two things. Firstly, I might write a really crap program and then just give up. Mm-hmm. And I think in my past, that's my kind of default, is to give up. And I've started not doing that now. And so there's something really icky about feeling like, ooh, I might go back to like giving up. I don't want to do that anymore. So I sort of give up before I start. Or the other thing is, I might write a great program and then I have to move on to the next level and do something about it and get these clients. And it's like, well, you know, because it's a bit of a change of client group for me. So it's like, that's kind of stepping out of my comfort zone. So that, I think that that's the two things around that.
What I notice about this, Colette, is how bloody sophisticated your protector is. Right? It's like, you're either going to fail or it's going to be wildly successful. Either way, you're screwed.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, it's a version of that kind of globalization, right? That globalizing language. It's either going to be terrible or amazing, but you're screwed both ways.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Damned if you do, damned if you don't.
And I don't think I even realized it until I wrote it down. It's like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is the thing that I find so fascinating about our self-doubt, is it will literally say anything to hold us back. It can be so sophisticated, right? It's like so nuanced, and it can feel genuinely true, right? And this is the thing, some of what's in your worry box, there is absolutely a risk that it will happen, right? And the thing that is kind of, you know, difficult about this is that we're often trying to protect ourselves from a risk we're already living with, right? I'm like, Colette, I imagine there's some risk of disappointment in there somewhere, perhaps.
Yeah.
And yet I imagine when you think about the fact that you haven't yet written this program that's been with you for so long, you feel a bit disappointed.
Yeah.
So you already know you can kind of be with disappointment.
Yeah.
It's just that the way this is being, the meaning you're making of this in your world is holding you back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyone else want to share anything? This is a great example, Colette. Thank you. Anyone else want to share anything that's come up? Yeah, Cassie.
Well, I think I've just realized that my archetype is fully in show, because I wrote down like normal things around what I might create is going to be rubbish or shit is what I actually wrote. I might get judged. It might be sent out and be like tumbleweeds. But then I realized I wrote, I might prove that I can't run a business.
Right.
And it's been a bit of a bone of contention between my husband and I, that I've maybe not got as far along as he would have liked me to be. So there's been a few sort of tensions. And then I look back at my archetype, which is the diplomat. So the idea of conflict.
Yeah.
But actually what I'm realizing, a bit like what you were just saying to Jane, is it's in one way or the other, because if I don't do it, then I'm going to be in conflict because it hasn't worked. But then I'm not actually helping myself. So it's, yeah.
Well, and isn't that a great thing to see, is that there is a risk that this won't work whether or not you do it.
Yeah.
That is kind of that risk of something failing. And honestly, if there's one thing I'd love us to change our meaning making around, it's failure. Because failure is very, very rarely once and done, right? Particularly when you're running your own business. Failure is often like just really good information to go, oh, okay, I've got to do something different here. I don't know what it is yet. And there may be some discomfort around all of that. But if we, what our self-doubt, our protector will often say or kind of hint at is wait till you don't care about failure and then try. Wait till you feel ready and then do it. Wait till you're no longer worried about disappointment or whatever and then do it. But all that happens is time passes. Because you don't take advantage of, or you don't see who you would become in the process of trying, is going to equip you with everything, every resource you might need if it doesn't work quite the way you had planned it. It's like, oh, but I've learned in this process that I could do it this way. Other ideas have come to me as I've been in motion. Right? So it's just a good thing to recognize that whether or not you do it, some risks will be present probably for the remainder of your business. Yeah. I think running a business is probably a full house of risk.
Yeah, completely. But it was just the interesting of like, I'm trying to avoid conflict, but actually by not doing anything, I'm putting myself in the firing line for conflict at some point when a conversation starts again as to
have it's an interesting version of conflict too, right? Because it's dissatisfying for both of you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. So these are great shares and generous shares, courageous shares. And what I'm hoping is that you're starting to see, oh, we worry about stuff that hasn't happened yet, right? And we worry about trying to figure it out first, usually, right? So something to consider is what are the protective beliefs that are kind of underneath those worries? Like if you could sum up all of your worries in a sentence that is probably going to start with I am or I am not, but it may not, that's not a rule, but can sometimes be a helpful prompt. But if you could sum it all up in a couple of sentences, maybe you've got one or two protective beliefs that are showing up here. What would they be? All right, so what are the beliefs that lie underneath your worries and your protective behaviors? They're often unconscious. They often start to explain why we're in this place of holding back, feeling stuck. It's likely that the protective belief will be connected to some kind of risk, one of those big risks. It may not be, right? But it's likely. It usually gives you an indicator of what's going on. Please feel free to share any of the protective beliefs you uncover. Anyone want to share? What? Yeah, Adrian, love to hear.
I had two. The first one was, you know, fully stepping into my potential won't win me any friends. People will reject me for thinking so highly of myself. And as soon as I wrote that down, I was like, oh, I know exactly where that comes from. I had like very strong feminist parents who encouraged me to speak up for myself for my entire life. And I got punished for it in school, socially. And so I was like, oh, that makes sense. It makes sense that I'm holding on to it. But the other piece that came up is I was like, well, of course, paradoxically, it's also the thing that has brought my closest friends to me. So it gets to be this sort of dual experience, which I think is a lot of what we're talking about here, that we're navigating these paradoxes all the time. And then the other piece was, you know, I'll never be able to relax into my success because there will always be something else I don't know.
What do you think that protects you from?
I suppose I think it protects me from being confronted or judged for sort of being a work in progress. Like it protects me from people perceiving me as not good enough.
What I notice about your beliefs, Adrian, is that they are both both true and not true, right? That your first one, for example, like speaking up has both been a blessing of the people that have come into your life and has been a source of rejection. Yeah. And so I'm curious to know, just in knowing that, right, because particularly sophisticated clients will offer us up a protective belief where we go, yep, that seems fair enough, right? So what you're offering up is something I completely believe. When women have the courage to say what they truly believe, it will both gather their people around them and cause them to be judged and criticized, right? And so I'm curious to know if there is a way that you can phrase that protective belief so that it perhaps doesn't feel so so fixed, maybe. It does. Like I didn't hear you use absolutist language. It doesn't seem like it's never going to win me friends. I'm always going to be judged. But I wonder if there's a way you can phrase that so it's like, it's both.
Yeah, I don't know that I have it fully phrased, but the image that's coming to mind is like a tuning fork. Like that part of me will show me like who I want to draw close to and who maybe it's like not for me. And that actually is nice because I think it puts me back at the center of my own experience. And so it's just like, okay, I can actually use that to help me decide like how I want to navigate through the world and whose company I want to keep.
I just really love that reframing of this as you actually have an internal tuning fork. When you look back to the things you want to get better at, right, those actions that you want to start taking, how does that help you? Or does it?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, actually. Like one of the things that I wanted to get better at was actually just like building a consistent practice around thought leadership. And I think I can now see that as a way that sort of serves my capacity to hone this tuning fork, and just to continue to sort of understand what resonates and what doesn't. So it's actually helpful to see that in service of this like desire to cultivate some resonance.
I love that example, and the idea of the tuning fork and creating resonance is, yeah, I'm a total metaphor for junkie, so I'm with you on this.
Me too.
And I just think this is such a lovely example of why it's pointless to judge anybody's protective belief, because sometimes, often, it's actually the source of, oh, hang on, do I want to hang on to this? Can I just tweak it? Sometimes, you know, and I always offer to clients, do you want to keep this? Because actually, right now, this protective belief may well be serving you. It just might not be something you want to, like, you know, pin your identity on, right? It's like you get to keep this. I'm not invested in you, you know, changing everything that you believe about yourself. Mm-hmm. But could it be tweaked to support you to do the things you want to do? Because I'm 100% rooting for your capacity and your capability here. That's never up for question, is your capability. It's more like what would help you feel resourced. So this may actually be what we're phrasing as a protective belief for you, Adrian, may actually be a source of discernment for you,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's more, and you may find as you just play with this and ponder it over the next while, you may find, oh, there's something underneath this that is the crux of the protective belief. I appreciate you've only had a couple of minutes to figure this out. So it may be the first time you've gone through this. So, you know, it's cool if that evolves. But just notice that you have already come up with a really, really lovely way of potentially supporting yourself to begin that process of, you know, thought leadership. It absolutely requires courage and some resilience around people may disagree. Can I be okay with it? Yeah. Really cool. Thanks, Adrian. That's a great
share. Thank you.
Anyone else want to share a protective belief that they've identified? I wonder, Jane, yeah, I was just going to ask if you'd uncovered one that would help you.
Well, I struggled with like figuring out how to phrase it or what, I guess I'm unclear on what this should look like. What I ended up writing was, I need to be worthy of attention, which fits with the archetype quiz, which now I can't remember which one it was, but it was like the leadership.
The conductor, maybe?
That was one of the top three, yeah.
Yeah. So I need to be worthy of attention. And does that kind of, that sums up for you what was in your worry box?
Yeah, I mean, there's some other ones, like it kind of fits, like the bad mother or being seen as selfish kind of plays into that, like worthiness put on me by other people. I struggled with this and I'm not quite sure how it should look.
And what I would offer to you is, I don't know either, but we'll figure this out. Yeah, there's no rule here. Yeah, I think it's interesting that you put the word worthy in there though. When I think back to what you were doing instead, they all seemed like quite noble, worthy pursuits.
Mm.
Doing the right things, almost. I don't know if that lands for you.
Yeah, and I think they're like the societally accepted worthy pursuits, right? Versus like the things that I make that help people, and then trying to do that and take ownership of that I can. Like, it's like there's the protective belief has something to do with like having permission. Something with that. I don't know.
Yeah, almost like if I follow these rules, then I'll be allowed to do the thing I want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of the like, who do you think you are?
Yeah. Yeah, I feel that. Yeah. What do you think might happen then if you just did what you wanted to do? Fuck the worthiness. Just do it.
Well, under all of that, when you were asking, what does it protect me from? I wrote down judgment and rejection.
Right. Yeah. I just want to offer this to you. Please feel free to reject it if it doesn't land. Could the protective belief be something like, I will be judged and rejected if I do what I want?
Mm. Yeah. Is that kind of when we're asking a client to identify the protective belief, like the phrasing like, I will be or I am, like the more in the...
Yeah, it's usually a kind of I statement. So when you say that for yourself, like, I will be judged and rejected if I just do what I want.
Mm-hmm.
When you say that to yourself, it's like there's a kind of landing of it. There's a sort of energetic click of some sort. And you may find, I mean, we're just playing around with what it could be here, right? So you may find you want to play with this a little more and kind of evolve it and refine it. But what we want the client to be able to do is to sort of own what's going on. So I think starting the sentence with the I is a way of going, I'm going to just claim this. I'm going to kind of try it on, see if this fits me, you know? So when you say that one for yourself, you know, I'll be judged and rejected if I do what I want. Be judged and rejected if I don't wait for permission. If I don't do all the worthy things first, I'll be judged and rejected. I'm just spitballing here.
Right? Yeah. I think it's that, but it's like the, if I, it's like the being wrong or the, if I don't know what I'm doing. Or yeah, if I get it wrong, then I'll be judged and rejected. That's like that piece. Yeah. That's really the like key component of that.
I love that you pointed that out because it fits with that image of like almost just get out of the car until we've figured out where the hell we're going. So mm-hmm. It's almost the piece before doing what you want.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you don't quite know what you want yet.
Yeah, I want so many things.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a good place to kind of land for this exercise. And feel free to just play with this, right? Good questions to ask. Just picking up on Vicky's question in the chat. You know, what's the thing what is that protecting you from? All we're doing is just trying to refine it for the client. You know, sometimes offering stuff up can be helpful. Sharing what you notice, right? Offering what you remember or what strikes you as maybe important, what has energy. And then you're just playing with the client to see what you get to, right? Ideally, you just want to get to something that feels like it helps to explain a bit more about what the underlying risk might be. Right, helps to explain a little bit about what's going on. Yeah. And so I just want to come back to you, love, and just see how this is landing for you and if there is other ways we can talk about this that might be helpful for you and your clients.
Say me.
Okay. I did, yes, sorry.
Okay. So I feel, I don't know if I have a block or what's happening, but like from column 3 to 4, I don't know what the difference is. Like my brain is just coming up with the same things.
Yeah.
And so having this really juicy, you know, protective belief, like I'm not able to come up with something. So I think, was it Vicky put something of, like, is there another way? Like, what is that protecting you from? I just go to, for example, I don't know if an example will help. Like in column 3, something around like, I don't have what it takes. Like I've really just completely lost my mojo.
Right.
And so the protective belief is like,
what if I don't really, like, what if I truly don't have what it takes? Like, what if 15 years I've been doing this, it's long gone, it's over. But I don't, I'm having a hard time, like, what is that actually protecting me from? Feeling like a loser, like I'm going through, but it just feels kind of surface level. I'm not able to really get to the heart of it, I don't think.
So the idea between these two columns, right, is the worry box is a way of revealing what you're worried about, like literally what your fears are, right? And the protective belief is a way of summing that up. So if the language is the same, that's great, fine. You know, it, like, don't make this really difficult for yourself.
Don't overcomplicate it with a...
It would be my invitation.
Wild idea.
And also, like, you know, the way you're describing this, that sense of losing your mojo, it's almost like, oh, I can kind of feel that sense of just wanting to, like, go, oh, I don't even want to do this, right? Yeah. So maybe there's some low energy right now, just in this moment.
Yeah.
And you can just go, okay, I can come back to this.
Yeah. And I think that brings up other worry, because I've been in this low energy for 6 months. Like, I've just not been able to, like, quote, get my shit together. And that's the worry of just, like, oh, what if? Like, what is going on here?
What's your theory?
Great question. I think that there is a level of burnout happening. And there's just not a lot of capacity right now. And that is really frustrating. Both financially, confidence-wise, like, it's hard not to take it personal. I'm not going to apologize for the emotion, but yeah, there's a lot of emotion around it too. I sometimes wish it was easy. It would be easier to have a protective belief that I could identify and move the fuck on. You know, I'm like searching, like, there's got to be a good one here.
Secret.
Yeah. And so I think the other piece of it is I'm in a phase of my life where there is a lot of transition happening.
Yeah.
And perhaps for the first time in my life, I'm not forcing my way through it. And that feels terrifying. So those are a couple of things that, you know, because I've been thinking about this for months. So I'm like, what energetically, like, what's really happening? So I feel like there's a big pivot, and all the pieces quite haven't landed yet.
So I just want to offer that there's two things that we're talking about here. This exercise may have helped bring up some of these things that are going on already, right? So finding a protective belief, I would say lowest priority ever in this moment, right? But recognizing that, there's a lot going on for you. And so, and this is the thing, right? That current context that we were talking about is we can make that mean, maybe I don't have what it takes. Right? And so the question to always come back to is, what else could be true, right? Could your low mojo actually be an incredibly sophisticated way of taking care of you right now? Because people with low mojo don't tend to do a lot. And that sounds to me like the perfect response to what you're describing.
When you said that, my whole body just... like, it's a lot less judgmental than what I've been saying to myself. And that felt really wonderful. Yeah.
So maybe you have exactly what it takes, not to put a shiny, shitty coach saying on it. But, you know, it's like, gosh, if we actually saw alternative meanings to how we are doing incredibly courageous things by just showing up when you're in that burnout place. It's like with low mojo, ideal. Ideal.
Yeah, I just noticed some expansion and possibilities start opening up of like, huh, maybe I could do this. Or maybe like I literally went to some specific things of, well, that could be fun. That's low pressure because there's also financial obligations I have to maintain through this exploring whatever is next. But I feel some expansion with that. So thank you.
Yeah, you're so, so welcome. Yeah. What could be fun? What could be low pressure? That's like perfect. Yeah. Yeah. So notice how we can get to some really interesting places with clients when we kind of detach from the outcome. Like I'm like, Adrian's come up with this fantastic, like, way of seeing, oh, actually I'm being discerning. Angela's uncovering, oh crikey, I'm way more resourced perhaps than I had given myself credit for. Like you start to see that even though we are looking at protective beliefs, our clients know what wants to bubble up, right? And it's like, if you stay with them rather than the bloody process, right? It's almost like, who cares if you find a protective belief today, right? But if you stay with the client, not the process, if you stay in that place of loving detachment, you'll get where you want to go, right? Yeah, Sal.
In our pod the other day when we were practicing and we had this exact thing, we ended up just staying with the client because it wasn't the time to do the... and. Then had a conversation about is you can't practice a tool and not be responsive to the, because then it's so counter to what we're trying to do. So that was beautiful to see you just stay connected and do what was helpful and of service to the client rather than God damn it, we're going to find a protective belief if I have to drag your mojo out. Yeah. So it's a good reminder in our practice pods, especially that we are still bringing all of ourselves to this as coaches and that will actually be more real. You tell us, that's actually more realistic, isn't it? That our clients aren't just going to show up and perfectly unpack all of this in a certain order.
It's exactly what happens because our clients are interesting, diverse humans with sophisticated, complex minds. And, you know, just think about the metaphors we've seen uncovered today. Like, it's like, oh, this is gold, right? So, and I always want you to remember that the tools are just ways in for you to do good coaching. All of these tools and these concepts and everything. Like, I think it's great to have a toolkit where you're like, oh, I kind of know how to approach this sort of thing with a client. This will be great. But always stay with the client. Always. Like, otherwise, what's the freaking point of the tool? Right? And let yourself be surprised. That's what's going to keep you so interested in this work.
And I guess you know the work so well that you can really trust yourself to track. Do you know what I mean? Because sometimes it's hard to know when to keep digging. With the protective beliefs, quite a few of us have come up with quite universal language, like who do you think you are, versions of the tall poppy syndrome. And it makes me think there is then some more why questions to get, because they're the one, the who do you think you are, it lands, but it does, you know, there's something deeper that's going to bring up the emotion in the way that what just happened, both with Angela and earlier in the call with Jane, I think, who looked emotional. So yeah. you know when you've landed on it, and it's just trusting yourself when to ask a couple more whys.
And what I would offer is, yes, I kind of have played with this enough to sort of get a feel for it. But you all have a feel for your clients too, right? That's why you're in this job, is you've got mega empathy. So all you have to do is stay in that place of, what's going on for my client right now? What feels like the thing to ask? Sometimes just naming the thing that's in the room that isn't being talked about and has nothing to do with the topic is the most helpful thing you can do. Right? Like just saying, I'm just noticing there's emotion here right now. You please take a breath. Like there's no, we're in no rush. We've got nowhere to get to. Where you are is fine, right? And just paying attention to that. It's why this concept of the healthy adult self, of staying in that for yourself, noticing when you're getting a bit entangled with your client or feeling like you've got to wrap up a session in a nice, neat bow or get to the end of a tool, right? And so the client walks away thinking, oh, well, I filled the form in, right? Mm-hmm. Then, you know, that might be a satisfying thing for both of you, but does it grow you? Does it help you move to a new level of understanding? Or something. Does it feel honest? You know, does it feel clean? Or does it feel like you just ticked a box? And you'll kind of know that. You'll get to know that in yourself if there isn't already a thing that you can kind of tap into, right? So, you know, yes, and yes, just feel your way through it, right? And the point you made, Sal, about tracking, I wanna do that now and come back to kind of the purpose of this and a metaphor to help bring this tool, I think, to life for everybody. But always know that you can go kind of out and back with the client, right? You can say, hey, look, we can pause here for a second and just sit with what's here. And then we can come back to this if you want to, right? So many of us are taught that we have to get to the end of something. And I just think, well, end of what? You know? Okay, so I just want to kind of, yeah, like I said, just bring in a kind of meta metaphor to bring this to life. So what you'll notice is that the client's goal and the things they want to get better at, they're like accelerators. Someone mentioned earlier that Jane from the morning had used this metaphor of the accelerator and brake. She's the coach with me, so I wonder if this came from that, but I don't know. It may just have been a spontaneous thing. But the things that we want to move us forward in our lives, like that forward motion sensation, they're accelerators, right? So if you're sitting in the car of your life, moving towards your goal, that's what's going to help get you there, right? What you're doing instead and what's in your worry box. So those protective behaviors and what is driving them are the brakes, right? The thing that's in charge is the thing that's driving the car is the protective belief, right? And the idea behind the protective belief is that if you start there, then it will help your behaviors, your protective behaviors, make complete sense, right? If I believe this about myself, of course I would be doing those things. It makes sense, right? If I believe I never finish things, it's never safe for me to finish things because then they'll be judged, then of course I'm going to be avoiding the thing like the plague. And I'm going to be engaging in a ton of protective behaviors that show me that that's what I'm doing. Yeah. So the whole point of this process, this coaching tool, is to help the client to understand what's driving their car. What's the belief that's driving their car right now? Right. And do they want to have that belief in the driver's seat? Right. And when we go into module 5, we'll talk about more helpful beliefs, other beliefs that we could choose to think. Sometimes those helpful beliefs are, like we saw with Adrian, a tweak of a protective belief. It just mushes it around a bit and you start to see, oh, hang on, something new's opened up here. Right? So often the distance between our protective beliefs and our more helpful beliefs are not that far, right? Which is great news for a client who feels really wretched about being stuck where they are, right? But what I'm hoping you're seeing is that this is a paradox at work, alive in us, right? We both want the goal and to accelerate towards it, but we don't want the risk, right? So we're kind of in this place of having a foot on the accelerator and a foot on the brake and feeling really bloody stuck, right? And so, you know, the whole point of this is we want to not necessarily find the answer or a solution or help anyone sort of solve it all. It's to articulate a good problem, what I call a good problem. When you can name for yourself the thing that's holding you back, when that has been an amorphous cloud of uncertainty and crunchiness and stuckness, and then you can name it for yourself, you bring it into the light, bring it into consciousness, then it's a problem you can start to play with. Right? Sometimes it's like, oh, just in reframing this, just in seeing this slightly differently, even seeing it on the page and thinking, this is something I've grown out of. This is something that I inherited from my dear mother. And that's how she ran her life. And I don't want to do that anymore. Right? And I've seen that so many times with clients who just go, oh my God, this doesn't even belong to me. I've just never questioned it. It's part of my meaning making that is so entrenched in me. But as a healthy adult, I can shift how I think about this, what meaning I make from this. So sometimes those protective beliefs will be inherited. Sometimes we will have grown out of them. And sometimes we'll just go, you know what, this no longer fits with who I want to be. This doesn't fit with the goals that I have for myself. So something's got to shift, right? I've got to make a move here, right? Equally, our clients may bring that protective belief into the world and go, oh, yeah, that. Not quite ready to give it up yet. And there's always a consent piece here, right? Because we have no value judgment over their protective behaviors or their protective beliefs. It's like, this is a way that you're creating some safety for yourself in the face of risk, right? And when and if you become ready to change that, totally here for you. We can talk about something else next time, right? It's like I'm not going to whip away your safety net. My goodness, that is not my jam. Equally, if we both agree, yeah, that's something I want to shift, and yet there is this kind of push me pull you, there's the brake and the accelerator, right? Neither of us need to have a real ambition to shift this quickly, because that's not going to help anybody either, right? But there is some ways that we can unlearn that's the only way you can think about this. That's the only meaning you can make from it. And so rather than deal with what's going on, we start to look at what the alternatives are, which is what Module 5 is kind of all about, changing that story and looking at how we can unlearn what we've taken to be as just factual news, right? We start yelling fake news at it. Oh, I'm sorry for the Americans, but that might be a sensitive phrase. Fake news. Anyway, but yeah. So what I'm hoping is that when you see the link between that fourth box and the second box, right? The protective belief starts to explain the protective behaviors. It's like, well, what other option did I have? You know, if I believe this, of course I would be doing that. And so it starts to just liberate a little bit of judgment, maybe a little bit of that sense of doing something wrong, or I don't know, feeling a little hooked into it, into that belief. when you start to see that your protective behaviors, those things that you may have some judgment and shame around, are actually serving a really important purpose, right? They're diverting your attention from whatever you think is really scary, whatever's got a lot of worry or fear around it for you. Okay, I just want to pause there for a second because we're kind of at time. Anything people want to say just to kind of maybe close this or see where you're at, check in, anything that wants to be shared? Tina?
Well, just something really came out for me when you were speaking to Angela, and just that importance, and it came through your philosophy that you really do believe that clients are the experts on their own experience. And it is not our job to assume what their words mean or anything. So when Angela said something along the lines, like, I really don't know what's going on for me right now, that's an invitation, right? So coaching wise, you might feel like, oh, I should help her, I should jump in. But you actually said, well, what's your theory? And then from there, that's where the breakthrough was. And it all came from your philosophy that Angela knows. You're not the expert on Angela. She is, you know, you're there to support her. But it's just, that was really powerful to see.
I'm so glad that helped. Yeah. Yeah, it's very true. Like Angela's got a healthy adult self, most of us would kill for, right? So it's like, I just need to ask that part of Angela what her theory is, and trust that if there is something that wants to come out, it will. Yeah. Cool. Thank you. Yeah. I'm so glad, Angela. Yeah. Yeah. Genuine compassion, genuine curiosity. Take the rest of the week off if you need.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I hope that was helpful, like just interesting to kind of play with this stuff, right? What I would offer is in your practice pods, you may want to have a go at leading someone through this, right? It can be quite fun to do that. It just as a way of seeing, oh, actually, you can usually do this in sort of 20 minutes, maybe, you know, and then you've got the rest of the session to play with it. With an hour long session with a client. But I recommend, yeah, just playing with this, seeing what feels useful. The other tool that we haven't talked about is the belief biography, right? And that's when you kind of work backwards, where you take a protective belief that a client may go, oh, that I can kind of remember a few things that have led to that. Sometimes it might be helpful to say, well, let's list those out. Let's reassure ourselves that we're not going crackers, right? That actually there have been a number of incidents in your life that have led you to believe that, right? So then they're working backwards, maybe through the life map, or maybe just spending a long walk or a bath. I don't know what it is about baths and showers, can sometimes spontaneously allow that remembering. And it's not to dwell on it. It's very much about this whole purpose of this module. Why does my self-doubt make sense? What is it that's led to this experience in the here and now, right? So if you kind of have a protective belief that still feels a little fuzzy, you may want to take that direction of travel, like just think about the particular risk that it's associated with for you. And just look at where in your life have you experienced something in that ballpark, right? Where has that happened? Either you have experienced rejection, for example, or you've held yourself because of the risk of rejection, held yourself back because of the risk of rejection, right? And then you start to think, oh, no freaking wonder I'm believing this is the truth. Right? Do have a play with this. Do take care of yourselves. If this is felt a little edgy, a little vulnerable, please do, you know, just go gently. If you need more support, feel free to reach out in the forum, contact me. I'm right here. No worries at all. And next week we will be looking at then, you know, how do we change these stories that feel like the truth, right? And some fun tools for us to play with there. Okay, cool. All right, my loves, take care. So nice to spend time with you, and I'll see you next week. Okay.
Thank you. Bye. Thanks.